You send him your watch. He takes the pictures, the video, puts it online. Somebody buys it 2 weeks later for $90,000. And he doesn't tell the true owner. And he just takes the money and pockets it. He's doing Instagram. He's taking videos of him on vacation, him buying cars, him in his new place. And he was talking about Mark Wahlberg playing him.
Oh, in a movie.
In a movie.
Which could still happen, but go ahead.
Now more than ever. Now that it turns out to be, it was a Ponzi scheme, way better. So then what happened is I've had multiple people telling me like, oh, you got to do something. The Timepiece Gentleman, he ran a Ponzi scheme.
Obviously, he's an alcoholic.
Is all of his arrest DUIs and
yes,
drunk?
And some felony DUIs, because I guess it's the third or fourth time.
Yeah.
But what's his name again? I don't think I let you say it without being interrupted.
Anthony Ferrara. Yeah.
The Timepiece Gentleman. Who got hooked on watches. Because he was just simply, he had one and he sold it and made like $1,000 the first time. You know, then I guess he kind of realized that maybe watches are something that people will pay a lot of money for.
My understanding is he got in trouble. He was going to prison.
Right.
He gave a buddy, the story is that he told everybody, is that he gave a buddy, you know, he got a DUI, or I forget exactly why he went to prison. I'm pretty sure it's a DUI, tons of DUIs. And it was a felony. And this time he's going. So he's going to go for, I don't know how much, whether a year, 2 years, whatever. So he's going to go to state prison and he gives a watch to a buddy of his to hold. Well, when he's getting out, he asks the buddy to sell the watch because he has no money. And the buddy comes back and they find somebody to buy the watch. And I could have it a little bit off. Maybe his buddy sold it. Maybe when he got out, he sold it. And anyway, he sold it. And he made a little chunk of money, like $2,500, $3,500. I forget what it was. So then he thought this might be a thing. Like, what's going on here? So then he started a site where he started bought. You know, he went out and he didn't start the site right away. He went out and he bought a watch.
Right.
And then he resold it. And you're right. I think that's when he made like a grand.
Yeah, like a grand on that watch.
Right. And then he thought, hey, maybe this is a thing. And he thought, if I start, you know, kind of buying and selling these watches and, you know, people are doing this and maybe this could be a thing for me. And he started doing that. He was doing okay. And then he started doing the whole it till you make it.
Right. Sorry, you got to tell where he's getting. Because at first, it's kind of like he was buying expensive watches and selling them as exclusive. So what he was doing was legitimate. He was kind of like making a demand or just really just showing watches to people who didn't really pay watches a lot of attention. Like, man, that's a nice watch. You know, and he started telling the benefits of having a nice timepiece. That's what made him popular, like on all the sites, and people saw him because he started talking about the benefits of a nice timepiece.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's a salesman, you know.
Right.
So he starts selling the watches, and then eventually he comes up with like an app or a website where it's like, hey, you can give me your watch. I'll buy your watch. Or if I'll give you a little bit more money if you want to just put it on the site for consignment.
Correct.
Don't you have to be licensed to do that? Do you? Isn't that like a pawn shop?
For a watch consignment, though?
I don't know.
I don't think you have to be licensed to be a consignment. I don't know. Let me not even speculate.
Like, what about
a pawn shop? I wouldn't. Well, maybe. I would think maybe you do. Maybe you do. Because you have to at least be maybe incorporated or a business. You know, for the tax purposes.
Well, I don't know. I probably, if you're buying it, well, if you're holding it, I don't know. I don't know anything about that. So the point is, I could ask. I actually have a buddy who does stuff like that. He actually, his father died and left him a bunch of money. And now what he does is he lends people money, but he takes their assets. Like he'll say, you know, do you have a watch? You have a car? You know, he'll take the stuff from them and then lend them 10 or 20 grand. And he's like, you know, and if they don't pay, then I'll just take the stuff. He's like, I'm always.
Oh, he takes the title. He takes the rights to the stuff. And then if you don't pay, he comes in like, let me add that.
Oh, he said people will come show up with like, you know, Rolexes and all kinds of stuff. He's like, and I'll lend them 10 grand or 20 grand. And
he's not worried about that stuff being stolen.
This is not that kind of guy.
Oh, okay. I'm talking about the people he's dealing with.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think he cares.
He's not the kind of guy to be worried about it.
No, he answered
my concern directly.
So Anthony, He basically initially, I'm going to assume, because I've watched a couple of YouTube videos on it, that initially it was a legitimate thing, right?
Right.
Like he was probably doing it legitimately. And from what I watched these two guys on a podcast, and they were saying, and I knew this immediately. Anyway, just watching the guy, like, I don't care how many watches, unless you're Rolex. You know what I mean? You're not making this kind of money. You know, he's buying cars.
Right.
He rented a condo in, is it LA, for like $80,000 or $90,000 a month? Like, it was, the amounts don't make sense. Like, how many watches could you possibly be selling? And you're not getting a ton of money. You're getting, he's making 5 or 10% on these transactions.
Allegedly. But yeah.
Right. Right. So ultimately the scam, or the, not the scam, but the business model was, hey, if you give me your watch, send it to me, I'll get it appraised, take a look at it. I'll tell you, hey, I could get you $90,000 for it. If we put it on consignment, I'll let you know if anybody, what any bids that come in. And he takes a bunch of pictures of it, makes a little video, sticks it on his website. And let's say a week later, it sells. Somebody comes in and says, hey, I'll give you the 90, or maybe they say, I'll give you 80. And he takes 5 or 10% off the top. And then he sends you the rest of it, which isn't, you know, in my opinion, isn't illegal as long as that's what you're really doing.
Correct.
The problem is, at some point he got over his head, and he's an alcoholic, and he started doing the whole fake it till you make it, where he's doing Instagram, he's taking videos of him on vacation, him buying cars, him in his new place. He's putting up, he's doing YouTube. He's a big shot. And then he started, by the way, did you ever hear that he was telling his story? And he was telling his story, and he was talking about Mark Wahlberg playing him.
Oh, in a movie.
In a movie.
Which could still happen, but go ahead.
Now more than ever.
That's
like, he's way more interesting now.
Yes.
So, but what I was going to say is, he started pitching his whole, I was an alcoholic, I had an addiction problem, went to prison for that, got arrested like 40 times, went to prison, came out, started up this company, I'm doing great, I'm amazing, blah, blah, blah. That's okay. But now that it turns out to be a Ponzi scheme, way better. So then what happened is, ultimately, he calls you up, or you send him your watch, he takes the pictures, the video, puts it online. Somebody buys it 2 weeks later for $90,000. And he doesn't tell the person that sent him the watch. He doesn't tell the true owner. He just says, yeah, look, you know, I got some bites. I'm still working on it. Like, don't worry. We got some interest. You know, it's probably might take a couple of months, but I'm going to get you that price, you know. And he just takes the money and pockets it.
So, like, I'm thinking he's buying knockoffs. Right? How long do you think you can have someone's watch without there being a problem?
Well, you know, eventually what happened was, once people got to the point where it's 6 months, it's a year, it's 2 months, like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
He just ghosted them.
Wow.
So he was ghosting people. People are reaching out to everybody that's associated with him saying, hey, this guy ripped me off. They start contacting the police. But the problem was that the police were saying, well, you gave him your watch to sell. He just hasn't sold it. You know, I'm sorry you haven't gotten it back, but you gave him a consignment. You know, he's got it on consignment. Like, that's between you and him. I don't know that he's actually, well, like, they didn't know for
sure.
They'll
say it's contractual. Basically, the police say.
So it's commercial. So it's not a criminal matter. You can sue him. Now, who the hell can sue you? You know, that's a problem in and of itself. So I got to fork out more money for a lawyer. I got to try and track this guy down. I got to serve him. And the truth is, I don't even know that he didn't sell the watch. I just know he's kind of ghosted me. And he would, you know, listen, con men are good at spinning you, so that, you know, they can get another 2 weeks, and then a month, and then another 2 weeks, another 2 weeks. And, you know, sometimes people get frustrated and they just go away. Or if you needed money and you're pawning your watch, you might not have enough money
to get a,
because a lot of these watches aren't $90,000. They're $5,000 watches. So you don't have the money to go pay for an attorney $15,000 or $20,000 to file a lawsuit to get back five.
Right.
And another thing somebody told, one of these guys said was that he was also, when guys would eventually catch up with him, a lot of times he would, oh, at one point he went to the police. He goes to the police. Yeah, he goes to the police and says he was robbed of like 10 watches, 10 or 20 watches. So now when people
are— That's clever. That's the smart. That should have been the beginning.
Yeah, he should have done that from the very beginning. Well, I think this was towards, this was about after about a year or so before it collapsed, probably a year or two ago, when it was inevitable that people are having issues. People, you know, he can't pay them. They're catching up with them. They're getting attorneys. They're calling the police. And so now he's at the point where he's saying, hey, I was robbed. Your watch was one of them. I'll give you another watch.
Right.
You know, and he gives them another watch that he says is comparable, or he says, I'll sell it. He tries to pay. Sometimes he's paying them back, or he negotiates a, you know, in real estate, it'd be a short pay, but he negotiates a, you know, look, I can't pay you this much. The watch was stolen. What do you want me to do? You should have had insurance, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then he says, you know, he gives them, I'll give you 40 grand, or I'll give you 5 grand or 50 grand, whatever it was, much less than he made.
Right.
So anyway, eventually the whole thing kind of collapses. And here's what's really crazy. He actually goes onto YouTube and does a video
about what he did.
About what he did. He never really admits that he was ripping people off on that video. I don't think. What he does say is that he's deeply in debt. His spending was out of control. His alcohol addiction was out of control. He's gotten himself deep into debt. He's $5 million in debt, but he's going to work hard and pay all that money back. So then he starts doing like a countdown. I just made $60,000, $80,000, $40,000, whatever, you know, trying to chip away at it. And people are hating on him. Guys are leaving comments. Guys are leaving posts. They're leaving. There's a Reddit thread. There's all kinds of stuff. People are going nuts. You know, they're leaving all these horrible reviews. And now he starts lashing out at those people on social media saying, you guys are the reason that I can't sell the watches. You're the reason that I'm going down. You are so selfish.
After waiting months, yes.
And here's what's funny is you don't have any watches, bro. Like, you sold it to the Ponzi scheme. Like, that's balls.
Yes. But that's probably the alcohol talking. Like, alcohol talking to his ego. Like, can you come here for a second? Let me talk to you.
Did you ever see him?
Yes.
Did you watch a video with him in the video?
Oh, no. I saw the documentary you sent me.
No, straight. I mean, he's very con man.
Really?
Slick looking, fast talker. I mean, just bullshitter.
Right on.
He's like exactly what you would think. Like, oh, you're a fucking snake. You're a snake oil salesman.
So, you know what's funny is because, like, you and I get the mantra of con men. Right. And so, like, I don't see us as con men, you know, we're just schemers. But, like, the con men that we both, like, in prison, the one that we met was Barrington.
Oh, God. Yeah. Couldn't he be great? Oh, he was so slimy.
God, have you looked him up?
No.
You have not?
Remember his last name was Sneed. He had changed it to Barrington.
Yeah, but Barrington was his prison name.
No, I know. He legally had his name changed.
Yes, he did.
His name was John Sneed.
Yes, you brought up the article. Who gave you that article? Was that your mom that looked that up?
No, Reese. Reese had it sent in somehow.
Oh, okay. All right. I figured maybe your mom looked that up for you.
No, it was Reese.
You need to track him down.
Reese?
Huh?
Oh, Barrington.
Barrington. Yeah, but don't let me lose my point of thought or my train of thought, which is left the station. So the only con men we met were Barrington, and both of us agreed that just the con oozes out of him. You know, you'd be like, dude, like there's nothing he could, like if we met him on the street, there's absolutely no way we'd be conned by him. You know what I'm saying? It's impossible. So to hear him talk, right? You're saying you actually feel that if he was talking to you, you would believe what he was saying.
Yeah, he seemed genuine, which, you know.
Wow.
But obviously he's not.
Right.
I mean, the guy Anthony, right? We're talking about Anthony.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, you and I, like, it, you know, I always say that, like, you know, they always say con man. And I say con man because people just don't know the difference. But the truth is, like, we're fraudsters.
Yes. Isn't, unfortunately, there's not a distinguishing difference.
No, they don't say that in the newspaper. It's con man. Con man, he's a con man. It's like, and I'm sitting there like, I'm really more of a fraudster.
Yeah, like, can you please learn the difference, please? Thank you. I'm not a con, because a con man, to us, the definition of a con man is someone that takes the money directly from the person who actually has interaction with the person and takes them, like gets them to believe something that gets them to do something that they probably shouldn't do or that's going to very much harm them without knowing all the effects.
This is what's interesting, is that William Thompson was the original confidence man.
Right.
And so this would have been like the 1800s. I'm going to say it's the 1800s. The first time the word was used.
1800. Well, go ahead.
Yeah. It was like 1870 or something. It was in America. Yeah. People were here then. So here's what he was doing. See, now you got, you do that and you make me think, is that not true? And this is going off the top of my head. Oh, look, here it is. Operated in New York City in the late 1840s. Okay.
Whatever. Horses and carriages.
Yeah. But here's what he did. Listen to what he did. And so think about it. This is when the term originally originated. Think about the similarity here. This guy, here's why he got the name Confidence Man. He walked around in the business district of New York. And I don't know why it just says New York, because he actually traveled to different cities. He would walk around but this is where he got caught in New York. So what happened was he would walk around the business district, dressed very well, well-spoken, and he would walk up to guys that were dressed well, and he would walk up and he'd say, oh my gosh, and the guy would be like, oh, Tom. He'd go, Tom, hi, my name is, it's William. I met you at the party a couple weeks ago. I forget, was it your engagement party? Or was it, he'd go, oh, you mean so-and-so's engagement party. Oh, right. Yeah, I met you there and you were with a woman. I don't know if that was your wife. Oh, yes, yeah, that was my wife. And so this person thinks, I know him.
Right.
And he'd say, where do you work? Oh, you work here? You work at the, Bank of America building? Oh, okay. And the guy's like, yeah. And he'd say, well, he'd go, gosh, I have so many, I'd love to come up and see your office. But I have so many appointments today. He's like, I'm in a real pickle too. And he'd say, why is that? And he'd go, my watch stopped working and I had to drop it off at the jeweler. And keep in mind, a watch back then was like 15, like, if it was whatever, $30 or $10, whatever, it was the equivalent of about $1,500. That's what it's like an iPhone, but an iPhone that you can just walk away with. And there's no thumbprint or facial scan. So he would say, you have confidence in me, don't you? We're friends. And the guy would, what's he going to say? He'd go, oh no, we're friends. He'd go, you have confidence in me, don't you? And he'd go, of course I do. He'd go, I have so many appointments today and I'm in desperate need of a watch. Would you mind if I borrowed your watch so I could make all my appointments? And then I'll come back here about 4:30 and I'll meet you right here, or I'll come up to your office and I'll give you your watch back. I sure would appreciate it, Tom.
Wow.
And
the guy would,
they said, you don't understand. I thought I knew him. I thought we were friends with Jennifer and Bob. He was at their party. Of course, not realizing he was never at the party, bro.
Right.
He doesn't know your friend. He gave me his full name. That's not his name, and he was going to bring it back. He was dressed very well. He was a gentleman.
So wow.
But here's what everybody said. He kept saying gentleman. He kept saying, using the word confidence. You have confidence in me, don't you? You have confidence that I'll bring the watch back, don't you? You have confidence that I'll be here at 4:30. And they would go, oh, of course. So they would give him his watch, the watch, and he would leave. And he'd go two blocks over and he'd see somebody else and he'd go, oh gosh, Jim, I was at the, there we go. Oh, no, not Jim. My name's Tom. Right. Oh, I met you at that party a couple weeks ago. Everybody had the same story.
Right.
And multiple people, he would get several watches a day, bro. A day.
Of course. Because, in my mind, that's such a, like you telling me that, I'm like, that would work because it doesn't feel like you're taking something of value. You know what I'm saying? because you're asking for it to make your appointment. And if I knew you, of course I would loan you my watch. Like my watch, yeah, you can use my watch. You know what I'm saying? It just, that is freaking very, I think that's brilliant. I think brilliant.
I also think it goes to the times, right? Like most people didn't know about scams. They trusted each other, especially if he was a gentleman in nice clothes. You expected him. You thought he was in your social circle. So ultimately what happened was this. Here's how con man came. When the newspaper, when he eventually got caught, one day one of his victims, you know, months after he put in a police report, months later he was standing in the business district and looked up, and sure enough, he saw the guy.
Did the guy go ahead?
No, he sees him and he runs up and gets a cop, because used to be cops on the corners, right?
Of course.
The cop runs up and grabs him. So they arrest him, and they had, by that point, they've got 10, 20, 30 different complaints. So he goes to jail. You know, I don't know how long or anything, because he did get out, because he did do this multiple times throughout throughout the U.S. But what happened was, when the newspapers reported it, they, you know, it used to be like the Gutenberg press, where they had to put in each letter.
Yep.
So they first called him, you know, they said that everybody, you know, they initially called him the confidence man, but then they said it the first time confidence man, and then they abbreviated it to con man.
for the rest of the story.
Correct, because they didn't want to have to keep putting it in there, and you know you're limited on word space. So it ended up being, so guys like that ended up being known as the con man, as a con man. And what's funny is that this guy had a watch scam too.
Yes.
That's the connection.
You know, in the 1800s, a watch was very expensive because every one of them were made by hand. Like all of the little pulleys and the dials inside the watch that makes it work. Somebody actually sat there with the little stethoscope or whatever that thing is and put that together and made those. They had watchmakers. Watchmakers had shops, and they made a fortune. They made a fortune. So for them to loan them as well, I'm sure they were pissed off. Pissed off.
Did you ever
wonder where he was hawking them? Like for him to do that.
Somebody was super happy.
Huh?
Somebody must have been super happy.
Oh, they're like, dude, my God, Bill, where are you getting all these watches?
Mm-hmm. You're my favorite customer.
Yeah, that's right. You are fantastic.
I mean, no serial numbers, no. Somebody walks in and says that's my watch.
Like back then, unreal. Crime was mostly violence. Anyway, I'll get distracted because dueling and fighting, all that stuff was proper. You know what I'm saying? Back in the 1800s. Right. So, the sheriff only really, like, locked people up for, like, ordinance violations. You know, murder was probably, like, you and I got into it. I have the right to challenge you to a duel where one of us would be dead. You know, so.
That's insane.
That gets rid of murder. That kind of like.
Combat.
Huh?
Mutual combat.
Yeah. That eliminates, like, murder charges were almost nil. Because I could be like, you know what, Matt? I challenge you to a duel, you bastard.
What could you imagine? You could just poison someone too. Like, what are they going to do?
They got no
forensics. They got no forensics.
Oh, yeah.
What are you going to do? Trace it back to some chemical in my house? Like, you know, I got sick and he died.
Oh, always thinking about how to get around the system, Matt. Just challenge the duel. Just challenge the duel.
I don't want to duel anybody. I don't want it to be fair.
Yeah, that's, you don't want the 50-50 chance. But look.
No. I forget which president actually got into like a duel on the White House lawn.
It was Adams.
Was it Adams?
John Quincy Adams, yeah.
Fucking idiot.
No, but it was Hamilton that got killed in the duel. I think if Adams did it, Adams won. So, hey.
You know. Hamilton. So, I would have loved to have seen that musical.
You haven't watched it on?
No, you got to go see it.
I've watched it on YouTube. Bro, anyway, like my first, like, I'm trying to remember what it was when I got that iPhone and the YouTube. Like, I was cooped up like.
This is amazing. Oh, my. It's magic.
like anything I could call to mind, like I'm looking it up. I picked an obscure artist that I liked, and I typed in her name, and it came up. It gave videos of her interview. It showed me all of her music videos. I'm going like, oh my God. Yeah, I didn't want to go anywhere. I pulled up an old episode of Police Woman and watched it the whole time going, this is unbelievable. Like, why was I locked up? I missed most of my life.
So let's get back to this guy.
Let's go back to the watch.
Anthony. Yeah. Anthony got arrested recently.
Yes.
I don't think he's been sentenced.
No. And I should have looked him up. Like the viewers will be telling us, I should have brought him up on Pacer. And it's a federal case, right? Or
is it federal? It does seem like it'd be federal.
Yeah,
right?
It would be federal. If he did it online, it would definitely be federal.
Okay, hold on. This guy's.
And then I was going to tell you about I've been helping people with the compassionate release because they changed they made some things retroactive. So I've helped a couple of people with motions, which are very easy, like fill out the blanks, and it got granted. Federal.
Oh, okay. It is federal, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was it. So it, the charges, you know, wire fraud, looking at 20 years, but he hasn't been sentenced yet.
No.
He's 35, by the way.
Oh. 20 years. He's been not 15. I think 25. Been doing it for
10 years. Got a bunch of DUIs and an evading arrest in Texas.
Yes, they said he had a high-speed chase.
Did he?
Yes.
An idiot. hold on. Where is he being held? Federal jail. In a federal jail. There's no federal jails. Okay. In
Miami, yeah. There's detention centers, yes.
Yeah, but they're saying jail. Not the same thing at all. So
excuse me, confidence, man. Go ahead.
So let's see what else. What else are we doing? Oh, okay. So we're waiting for him to get sentenced. See, that's what we should have waited for him to get sentenced. So I do have another question for you. Did you hear about Bankman-Fried?
Asked me about
Sam Bankman-Fried. Right. Remember the guy from is it FTX where, you know, we've talked about him before, I think. Anyway, so you don't know the case. He had the cryptocurrency exchange that went under.
Yes, now I remember. Yes.
So the federal sentencing, his PSR came out, the recommendation, 100 years. Now he fought it. He's fighting it. Pete's saying he'll probably get 20 years, which is what I've been was saying.
I don't believe you can score out to 100 years. I think category
Bernie Madoff.
Six, huh?
Bernie Madoff.
Okay. Bernie Madoff didn't score out to 100 years. The judge gave him the maximum and ran it consecutive. You can't score out to 100 years because all that 100 year crap is consecutive sentences. And that's what I hate, because if you had three aggravated identity theft charges that carries 2 years each, the news would say, you know, Matt Cox is facing up to 6 years. That would be each crime run. You know what I'm saying? That's how they state it. Because I remember thinking, like, wow, why so much time? It's only because they're taking the maximum penalty and assuming you'll get it consecutive.
Well, yeah, but this is the PSR.
There's no way he can score out to 100 years.
Okay, I'm just telling you, that's what the PSR said. Oh. So keep in mind, too, he did go to trial. And by the way, the government is arguing for the 100 years. So I hear what you're saying.
That's absolute insanity. That's absolutely insanity.
You know, that's
insane.
That's why at the beginning of this, I told you that, like, Pete was, because Pete and I were on the phone, you know, texting back and forth. And I was like that. I said, no, look, not that he's not, I said, a scumbag, but and really, honestly, look, I would be sitting here saying he doesn't deserve 100 years. That's ridiculous. I would be saying all that, except for the fact that he's super arrogant and he went to trial. Like, they were trying to offer him way less time. And he was like, oh, I don't think they can prove this. And I don't think that, like, and I even interviewed this chick that is friends of his. she was saying she's arguing with him, and she was like, you know, Sam, what is your lawyer saying? And he's like, oh, my lawyers are idiots. And it's like, what do you, bro, you're going to fucking end up in jail for a long time.
Yeah, 100 years is a long time.
It is. Pete's saying he's going to get 20. And on a 20, like we just said, you can do 12. If you program, you can end up getting out at 12.
Right. But he's not, that's outlandish. 100 years is ridiculous, bro. Like, I wouldn't even entertain that. Don't even entertain that. That's for a first offender that hasn't committed murder.
I agree. I think he's probably going to get 20 years.
Yeah, 20.
And I think that's what I'm
already saying. Madoff actually ended up with 30.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
Why? Because he died?
Well, if that's the case, he ended up with 8. If it's because he died, he only ended up with 8. But
you mean they appealed it and they lowered it to 30?
Yes, the appeal court thought, like, that's – anyway, that's another whole story. That's where my sister showed me a quote about if you plead guilty, you can't get the statutory maximum. The Supreme Court's like, come on.
No, I know that because I remember that was one of the things, one of the reasons initially my PSI said 32 years of life. It was 30 years for maximum for bank fraud. And it was 2 years for aggravated identity theft. And I was like, I'd rather go to trial. And so the prosecution sent the U.S. I'm sorry, the U.S. attorney sent the Secret Service agent and my lawyer down to basically negotiate with me. And we got it down to 26 years. And then, of course, my lawyer said she was going to get another, you know, 10 or 12 years off of that. Oh, yeah. By, you know, just some things.
Plead out to this, waive your rights.
Right.
And then I'm going to get something done without telling you that if I don't.
There's nothing you can do.
Well.
But, the reason they went off 32 is because if I had pled guilty to 32, I would have automatically been able to appeal.
Correct.
Right? You can't plead out to the statutory maximum. I have more benefit to go to trial.
Than
to do that.
Yeah.
Right. Isn't that what you were just saying?
Yes.
It's
part of a frustration I have with the feds in that much time. And their manipulation of how you plea out and then they decide to give you the statutory maximum anyway. You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous. And him, them offering him or them talking about 100 years, it's just like, to me, that's absolutely insane.
Well, they want that for the headlines. They know he's going to appeal and he's going to get it dropped down. It's going to end up being 20. Like, they know that. You know what they do, you know?
I try not to let it make me mad, but that crap gets me. It
clearly does.
Yes.
So what is it you said? Because people are always asking, what's Zach doing? And every once in a while, somebody says, you know, when's Zach getting out of jail? I'm like, bro, he's been out of jail. Like, check the fuck. What are you doing?
He's in a mental jail right now. Yeah. He's in a mental jail.
So what is it you said you're doing now? You've been doing people's.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I obviously I'm like a clerk at Wawa's, but I lost my regular job. But I've been doing like legal work, like 3582 motions, which is because they made things retroactive on the sentencing commission. I've been doing those motions for people. It's $100, so it's been pretty steady. It's been like probably like 15 per month for a little while, but it's probably going to taper off. So I got to kind of like venture into something else. But I've been really like trying to make my niche in getting credit for time served. Like if you were locked up and you didn't get certain credit for time that you had been in jail for the state and stuff.
Right.
So I've been credit for time served and removing detainers. So I just charge a basic $100. So my name's been getting around because I've been having some success. So it's been what I call a maintainer.
You got to start a newsletter like the Jeremy Gordon. What was his name? Jeremy. What
Jeremy
was
Gordon. Can you, for me, would you guess what you think Jeremy Gordon looks like? Like if somebody walked in and you go, I think that's Jeremy Gordon. What do you think that person would look like?
I assumed he was like a white guy, a little nerdy with glasses, you know, 5'10", but average, very average is what I see. Why? What does he really look like?
He looks like a black crackhead.
He's a lawyer, though.
A black guy with a toupee, huh?
Really?
He probably weighs 110 pounds, black guy with a toupee that looks like I do, scruffy, and like I just smoked, and now I'm a pose for this picture. You know when I saw Jeremy Gordon, I'm like, what?
You know how many people I know contacted him and gave him money to take on their case? Like,
he's huge ripoff. Huge. Huge.
So why don't – I always thought about this too because, you know, there was a FedCure.
Yes.
And there were, you know, all these – like they never did anything. Never did nothing. But they all raised money because I remember my mom gave like $300 or $400 one year. And every year she was giving them a couple hundred dollars because they would, one, pitch stuff to the inmates. But mostly what they were doing was just taking articles about prison reform and about changing the sentencing guidelines. And he was then cutting and pasting. And then he'd put a paragraph or two about what he was currently working on. And then if he had anybody that he helped, he would list like this guy, I just got 7 years knocked off his sentence. I filed a 2255 and got 7 years knocked off. This guy, I got. So he would have a couple of those every month and do it. And so people are calling him, hiring him. Why don't you do that? Because these people that you know in jail would pass your name around.
True. That's what you call a confidence man,
Matt. No. I'm not saying illegally. I'm not saying do anything illegal. You're really doing the work. It's not a scam. You're actually helping people.
But so does Jeremy Gordon actually does the work. The law work, it really is a scam because I believe like in my heart, like someone told me this at the beginning of my bid and probably my first 100 days in prison, not jail. Once I got to prison, in the first 100 days of prison, sorry to make this screen bounce. Somebody came up to me and told me, he goes, because I was talking about an appeal and I want to send something in. Have you seen a lot of people get relief? And this guy told me, he said, and I'll never forget this. He said, you know, I think it's all bullshit. He goes, I think they pull a name out of a hat and said, just so everyone keeps hope. And they'll say, let's just give this guy some relief. Everybody else gets denied. Let's give this guy some relief. Let's give this guy some relief. You know what I'm saying? He goes, I think they do that just to keep everyone thinking that there's a possibility. But a vast majority of us get denied. Like, I remember him telling me that, and I'm going, that seems very bleak. But then I started realizing, I go, I think that is the case. Listen, I won one, my old cellmate. I got him compassionate release, right? And when I read the judge's order, it brought it all the way home to me that that's the case. The judge picked my old cellie when I did his motion and decided I'm going to give this guy relief because he's been in jail for 25 years on a 30-year. No, he's been in jail for 20 years on a 25-year sentence. He's got like 50 months left. He's got every disease in the book. He's sick. You're diabetic and all that stuff. And we've decided somewhere that we're going to give people relief. So I'm going to give him relief. That judge went past every marker and like made excuses. Like one of the things were you were supposed to contact the warden and ask the warden to give you relief, right? And my cellie hadn't done that, right? And he goes, well, he tried. He talked to the counselor and the counselor said that he didn't qualify. So what else is he supposed to do? That right there, Tony, I'm giving this guy relief whether he qualifies for it or not.
Yeah, where usually they would use that to deny him right there. Oh, he didn't go to the proper channels. Boom, denied.
Exactly.
No, remember John Gordon? You remember John Gordon?
Yes.
John Gordon had said, which was a guy that Zach and I were locked up with. He said one time, they're going to do whatever they want to do. Remember that?
Yes.
I remember that on my case, the statute of limitations was running out. I was like, well, you know, some of these charges, like statute of limitations is running out. He's like, yeah, they can extend that. I go, well, no, statute of limitations. He goes, yeah, he said, they'll connect it and say it was ongoing and that they didn't discover it until you were caught. And he goes, they got 100 ways to extend it. He goes, look, they're going to do whatever they want to do. And I was just like, that's my experience.
Feels hopeless.
Yeah.
Back in the days.
Man.
So anyway, I wanted to tell you about it, connecting all those dots. So I get a there's a her name is Jung, a girl named Sally Jung, J-U-N-J, J-U-N-G. So she writes me, and she has some type of cancer, and she wants me to do her compassionate release. So I said, okay, yeah, I'll do it. I said, what kind of case did you have? She said, I had fraud. I'm like, fraud. So then I look it up, and then she has a boyfriend. And this is important because this is one of the things that goes back to the 100 years. So she has a boyfriend that's her co-defendant. So apparently what they were doing is they ran an ad in the paper saying that it was an ad in Texarkana, I think it's Texas. I don't know if it's in Arkansas or Kent or in Arkansas. I don't know if it's in Arkansas or Texas, but it's called Texarkana. They ran an ad in the paper saying that people, if you own at least 1 acre of land, you got to go. It sounds like you got to go. If you own at least 1 acre of land, you could qualify for a government grant, and we'll help you do the paperwork. Sounds familiar, like someone that's like looking for people for loans for homeownerships, and then they call in and they
right
take their identity. But people would call in. This is during the COVID or right after the COVID or whatever. So people would call in and give them their vital information, and then they turned around and applied for EIDL loans or whatever it was, and in their name and get loans in their name. That's what they were doing. So they would call people. So people would call up and they take their money and get loans. And this is two people. She got 5 years. He got 15 years, right? But he had never been convicted of a crime before. I think what they ended up getting was probably about $400,000 worth of loans. And they had a slew of loans that didn't get approved. And of course, you know, what do they call that?
Potential loss.
Intended loss.
Intended loss.
Okay. Yeah, gave him 15 years, right? So I'm like, oh my God, I'm talking. She called me. I'm talking on the phone. I said, your co-defendant got 15 years? She goes, yeah, they tried to slam it. So I look him up. He's never had any offense. He had a speeding ticket. Do you know where they had him?
Right.
USP Pollock.
Why? Did he go to trial or he pled guilty?
Yes. Like, this guy's never even had a traffic ticket. And he's at he had one traffic ticket. And he's at USP Pollock?
Well, why? I mean, do you know why?
Yeah, because
it doesn't seem possible.
That's their punishment. A prosecutor can get you at a penitentiary. I met a guy, and I've been dying to remember his name. I'm going to remember his name. I wrote it down, and I still got all my paperwork. But I met a guy at USP Beaumont, right, that was somebody that used to do investments, and they had him at a penitentiary. And he barely had, like, custody points. He barely had 6. They were using against him a fight that he had in junior high, saying he was violent.
I knew a guy named Lance. I want to say Lance. I forget. Anyway, his case was massively huge, right? He went to trial. But literally, his points were like, he had like 2 or 3 points. And they sent him to a pen. Someone tried to extort him.
Yes.
He said, I'm not paying. And he's an old man, by the way. He's like 60-something years old, 62, 63. When he went, I think it was probably 70 when he got out. So 60, whatever, 62, 63, guy punches him straight in the face. Like he's like, I'm not going to pay you. And the guy goes, bam, and smashes him, knocked out his tooth. And he goes to the hole, and he stayed in the hole for basically And of course the warden and his lawyer went at it back and forth to get him moved to a medium. Keep in mind, this guy, there was no reason for him to be there. Oh, yeah, yeah. I met him in the...
What was his crime, though?
Oh, it was like wire fraud, and it was bank fraud and wire fraud. It was a huge case. If I could remember it, if Pete was here, Pete would be like, oh, that was Lance so-and-so. Yeah, that was a, you know, it was a massive case. But he went to trial, and I mean, like, it was like a loss of like $1 billion. It was outrageous. And he went to trial, he lost, and then he ended up doing like a year or so in the pen, but he only was there for a, not in the hole for a month or two.
Wow.
You know? And yeah. So eventually they sent him to a medium for 18 months and they sent him to the low. But he was there and he said, the only reason my lawyer or anybody could figure out why I went to a pen was that the prosecutor was making it as hard for me as possible. But
they,
to me, that's
actually the prosecutor. The prosecutor wants other inmates to hurt them.
Right. That's what I'm saying. He's trying to get you killed.
Which,
like,
is,
this guy can't go to him. Listen, I'm a tough guy in comparison to Lance.
You were smart when you told me that you're like, I'm not taking a gun charge. Like,
yeah.
Like, yep. You very smart, because your perception, I don't even know what to, I want to always ask you what gave you the warning sign. Like, that's going to increase my custody. I'm not doing it.
What happened was my lawyer came to see me and she had me sign all the papers. You're pleading guilty to this. And when I got to the gun charge, I said, I didn't have a gun. She goes, I know, but they found a receipt. I went, they found a receipt because my girlfriend, who was ex-military, had a gun. I said, but they didn't find the gun. She goes, well, it doesn't matter. You had a possession of the gun. I said, no, I didn't have possession. I said, in fact,
well, first of all, why? What called that out to you? What do you think called that out to you?
Well, I it's just that I didn't mind saying what I did.
Right.
But I didn't want to lie and
I'm sorry, what? Had to laugh. I'm like, go ahead. Well, I didn't want to lie.
Lying's what got me into it. So okay. I didn't want to lie. I don't want to say I had, because it's like, okay, well, one, I don't want to take a gun charge because I didn't have a gun.
Right.
It's like saying, oh, by the way, you're going to also plead guilty to this brick of cocaine. Doesn't matter. It's not going to add any more time on your sentence. And I'm going to be like, no, I'm not a drug dealer.
Right. Right.
I don't tote a gun. I never had a gun. And I said, I didn't have a gun on when I was on, you know, on the run. Since I was a felon, I've never had a gun. I had two guns. When I became a felon, I gave them to a buddy of mine named Rudy.
Right.
So, well, no, one I gave to Dave and one I gave to Rudy. So I said, I didn't have a gun. And she said, yeah, but, you know, she had it and you had possession. I said, no, I didn't. I said, in fact, I never touched the gun. And on top of that, I said, she had a kid. And when she said she was going to buy one, I said, if you're going to buy one, I told her to get a gun case. So she could keep it in the gun case so her son didn't find the gun. And she did. And I said, I didn't have a combination to the case. I said, and I'll go to fucking trial. No. And I didn't say that. I didn't say I'll go to trial. I said, that's not true. And she goes, Matt, what does it matter? It's going to be 3 years. You're going to get X amount of time. They're going to run them all together. And I was like, okay, whatever. So I sign it and I leave. I go back to the unit and everybody's like, what'd your lawyer say? I said, man, I signed for this. I said, I can't believe it. I said, she had me sign for a gun. And there was a big black guy there.
Of course. There always is. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, so there's a couple of white guys standing around and there's a big black guy. And guy, and I mean like 6'4", 6'5". And he's looking at me and he goes, Cox, you ever been in trouble before? I went, yeah, I was on federal probation before this. And he went, and you were on the run? I said, yeah. He said, you're charged in another jurisdiction? I said, yeah. He said, you evaded capture by changing jurisdictions. And I was like, he started doing it in his head. And he sat there and he goes, and you're taking a gun charge. And he goes, and you're going to probably get what? More than 10? Is there a possibility you're going to get more than 10 years? And I went, yeah. He goes, you're going to go to a pen. And I went, what? He goes, there's a good chance you end up in a pen. And I went, holy shit. And he goes, and look, he said, I'm sure you can take care of yourself. And I go, well, I can't. You're wrong about that. I said, I can't. What do you mean? And he goes, I'm going to be honest with you, Cox. He said, you'll probably get raped in a pen. And I went, what? And he looked at me. He said, if I was you and you didn't have that gun, I'd go back and I'd tell your fucking attorney not to turn that paper in. Because I'm telling you right now, your fucking custody level is going to shoot through the roof. And you're at least going to a pen for 18 months. He goes, and I don't think you're going to do well in a pen, bro. I went and jumped on the fucking phone. I'm going to try.
You never told me that story.
Are you serious? I've told that all
you,
this.
You told me you refused to get the gun. But you didn't tell me you had a war, because I have been going, no, like, didn't. Matt's intuition on that was dead on.
No, it wasn't my intuition. I listen, at that point, I'd given up. I was signing whatever she put in front of me. So, you know, you get to that, you know,
yeah,
I had been incarcerated multiple times. So I wasn't used to this. I was just like numb. And so anyway, yeah, if that guy hadn't been there, I'd have definitely, because keep in mind, I got 26 years and a gun charge. I would have gone. And I went to a medium. I would have gone to a pen.
Yes, you would have.
So luckily I got on the phone, I screamed and hollered. She called her. Where I was charged with a gun was out of Nashville, Tennessee. She called the guy, the U.S. attorney at Nashville in Nashville, Tennessee, and got him on the phone and said, "Why did you indict my client for a gun? He never had a gun." Starts explaining it. And then she said, he said, "What's the big deal?" And he said, she said, "Because now he's saying he'll plead guilty to everything, but he's going to go to trial on the gun." And he went, "God damn it." He said, "Let me tell you something." He said, "The U.S. attorney in Atlanta made me indict him for that gun. Because I told her I didn't even want this case. I didn't want to charge him in he goes, you let her know if he goes to trial, I'm dropping everything." Right. So she goes back, talks to the U.S. attorney. U.S. attorney said, "Okay, that's fine. He doesn't have to plead guilty to the gun." Now, wow. So
it was the Atlanta district attorney
that forced the guy at the Tennessee district attorney to charge me with it. So Millie comes back a couple days later and she says, "Okay, sign here, sign here, sign here." They drop the gun charge. And she tells me the whole thing. And yeah, I you know, but yeah, it wasn't my intuition because I just didn't know any better. I didn't know about points. I didn't know anything. And if that guy hadn't told me, yeah, I could have had a much, much different prison experience.
Your medium experience wasn't that bad.
No, it would have been, I said, a much, that right. The medium, but if I'd gone to
it. You said you would have signed for the gun, it would have been. So let me have been.
Yeah.
So let me tell you this. I got the obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what had me at a, I had low points. But the obstruction of justice had me at a medium. Because, you know, I had no gun or no violence. And they really wanted to jack my.
You also had a criminal history off the chart.
Off the chart. But even then, Matt, it was of no violence.
It still didn't get you up that high, right?
No, okay. Not for. So look, my sentence and category would have been less. I would have been home sooner. But they gave me the obstruction of justice because in your point calculation with the BOP, that's actually a level up. You follow what I'm saying? When they did my points. Whenever I entered the BOP, my points was 15.
Okay.
So I had 15 points the whole time, and I still went to the pen. I went to the pen with 15 points. 15 points is a low, huh?
20. I thought you had to have like 20 or 25 points to go. I think I had 25 points to go to a,
yes,
a pen.
Yes, you did.
You know, I came in with like 3.
Yes.
I only had 3 because I had a detainer. When the detainer came off, they dropped it to 1.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I had like 2 points for the detainer. Or was it 4 points and 3 was for a detainer? Whatever it was, I had a detainer.
You should have went to a camp, but I guess the low is... You had 3 points and had a medium. You must have had a management variable when you first started.
No, remember I had 26 years. You have over 20 years to go. You got to go to a medium.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, that's why 3 years later, I was like, they're like, you're below 20 years. You never should have been here to begin with. You got to go to the low.
And I never made it to the low.
You didn't miss anything.
And you know, when I thought I was going back, I said the only good thing about going back is I will finally get to go to one low. Because I'm like, I'm over 55. That 1 point from 15 takes me to 14. Yeah.
Listen, the when I got to the low, I can't even. This is going to just, well, nobody thinks I'm a tough guy anyway, but when I got to the low the next day, so like the night I was there, right? Like I get there, I get my assignment. Well, you could get up when I got there, this was before they were locking the TV rooms down. They counted at 10 o'clock and you could go back and go into the TV room. Well, most of these guys, I was in the majority of the people in my unit were in, they were in a Unicor. So they wanted to go to bed.
Right.
They worked all day. I'm going to bed at 10 o'clock and I'll wake up in the morning, eat, and then go to Unicor. So I walk into the TV room. There's, I haven't really talked to anybody. And I walk in there and I start watching TV. And, you know, you could stay there till like 11, 12 o'clock. So I'm sitting there watching this guy comes in, this white guy comes in. His name, they called him Slow Motion. His name was Christopher Doyle. He walks in and he says, how's it going? I went, good. And he looked at me, he said, how much time did you get? And I went, 26 years. And he goes, Jesus Christ. And I went, yeah. And he said, any way you can work on that?
That's what he said?
He said that. He goes, any way you can work on that? And I went, what do you mean? He said, I don't know, like cooperating or, and I thought, what the hell's going on? Like, that's not a conversation you have at the medium. Oh, like, what the hell? And I was like, no, I don't think there's much chance of that. Yeah, exactly. Currently, we're not. But at that point, I'd kind of given up. Remember, like my lawyer had said, they're not going to do anything. And so I was like, you know, I told him about how I had done American Greed. I'd done this, but I don't know that anything's going to happen. They don't seem to want to do anything. And he was like, okay. So then he stands up and he said, you changed channel yet? I was like, no. He said, let me show you where you're at. He said, you came from the medium? I said, yeah, I did 3 years. And he goes, let me show you where you're at. And he turned the channel to like channel 15, which was the movie channel. And they were running on a loop, the obstacle course that they'd done the week before. And there are all these guys running an obstacle course. And they're doing stuff like they're leaning on a bat with their head and they're going around and around and around. And then they stand up and have to start running and they're falling over because they're dizzy and they're falling. And then they run, they're running through mud and they run and they slide on a slip and slide and slide and grab a thing. And oh my God, bro. He's like, yeah, these are the gangsters you're locked up with, bro. I mean, it was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. Then it switches to karaoke night. And there's guys up there, and keep in mind there must have been six or eight trannies. So they're up there
at the load. It was trans at the load.
Of course, I mean full blown tits, ass, the whole thing. So not that many. There's only one. There was only like three that had boobs and the implants. And they're singing like Madonna. They're singing, and I'm like, where the fuck am I? So he goes. We're gonna go to the. He goes, tomorrow's Saturday or whatever. He goes, we're going to go to the yard tomorrow. He said, and I'm going to show you some shit that you ain't never seen before. I was like, what's going on? Listen, it was like walking in from the medium to the low. It was bizarro world.
Really?
It was insane.
Do you know?
So go ahead.
All I'm going to tell you is I remember you wrote me a letter, right? And you know what you told me in the letter about the low? You said, what? All right, so they moved me to the low because I had gotten back. I guess you had word I'd gotten back. You know what you said?
Right.
You said, "Go." Surprisingly, it's a lot better over here.
It was.
You did, honestly, you said that. You go, all right, so they moved me to the low, and surprisingly, it's a lot better over here. No, you said,
listen.
Surprisingly, it's a lot better than I thought it would be.
Yeah. Not having a cell sucked. And let's face it, that's a big deal. And you just couldn't go take a nap in the middle of the day there. Like most of the guards wouldn't let you do it. You could at the medium. Walk in your cell, close the door, lay down, take a nap. No problem. They threw you out of the unit every single day.
At the medium? So
there were some things at the low.
Oh.
At the medium, you could go to the library, which was always empty. The low, it's packed.
Oh, really? Yeah, you're right.
Oh, it's packed. But yeah, for the most part, overall, once you gotten okay with the living conditions, it wasn't bad. There was a better clientele, let's say. You know, there was a better group of guys there. They were smarter. They were funnier. And they had less time, so it wasn't as depressing. You know, you go and sit at a table and complain about your time. You know, even if it's, I got 26 years, poor me. And there's like, you're sitting with three guys that are like, I'm going to die here. And you're like, fuck, this sucks. You go to the low and guys are complaining about their 3 year sentence or their 5 year sentence. And I get to be like, I got 26 years.
You're like, you get to be the one, I'm going to die here.
You're going to die here. And by the time I got there, I had been around.
Right.
You know, so I wasn't the new guy. I wasn't, you know, and, you know, there just wasn't, not that there weren't tough guys there, but they were well-behaved tough guys.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, it wasn't that bad.
Well, you know,
not that I'm ready to go back. No.
Hey, when is it over? Before we go, when is it? Because I've got 9 months and mine is over.
You're what?
Probation.
Really? Mine's over in 4 months. Yeah.
Are you having a celebration?
I'll probably go have a pizza. Like my idea of celebration at 54 is vastly different than it was 20 years ago. Yeah. It's like, we're going to have two slices of pizza and I'm going to go to bed at 9:30. Oh, 9:30 instead of 8:30.
Well, what? How long has Jess been off?
Oh, she got off at like a year.
She had it. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she sent in the paperwork herself. She just filled out some paperwork and mailed it into the judge saying, hey, it's been over a year. Can I get off? And they were like, yeah, that's fine. Like one of her co-defendants had also done it.
Wow.
But yeah, like my probation officer, like I'm going to LA in a couple days, right? For like 3 days. You know, I filled out my report, scanned it, sent it in, you know, and then 2 days ago, and then she sent me something back saying approved. You know, she didn't bother me. She never comes around.
She hasn't been to the house in a while.
She's been in the house a couple of times, but you know, she's like, hey, are you home? Yes. I'm going to come by in 20 minutes. You going to be there? Yes. She comes by, she walks in, you know, stands there for a minute. How's everything going? Okay. All right. We're good. And I'm like, okay.
Nice. You know,
yeah. She's very nice. Like totally different than the first probation officer I had, where she was going through everything I had. And every time I saw her, she wanted urine, which was weird. She was on a drug case. And,
I've heard the transition, like it's like kind of when you're done, like I guess they come to see. This is what I've heard from like three people. So the last time you do a report, are they're gonna ask you to come in, or they come to see you, and they basically tell you like, hey, this is it. Like this is the like I think like I don't know if you know the exact date you get off or if you just know the month.
I just kind of know the month. I know I started it in July.
So, but really like whatever 9th, day, huh?
Like July 9th, I left the halfway house.
Right. So then it would be, what is it over July 9th this year?
I'm assuming. Yeah. Right.
So July of this year, like it would be over. So they're just going to like, she might call you in or come by and just say, hey, this is the last time I'm going to see you. Basically you're off of supervised release on this date. And right. Then what happens is after that date, you get something in the mail that says it's been completed and now your judgment is turned into your restitution. It tells you the transformation from like where you're like right now, your restitution is open. So it remains open while you make payments. So if you agree to make payments, your restitution remains open. If you tell them, F you, give me a judgment, then they'll put a judgment against you. Against your taxes and any lottery money you win, and you don't have to make payments. So you get the option. Once you get that paper, they'll tell you officially you're off supervised release. Your sentence is completed is what they'll tell you. And then they'll ask you about how did you want to proceed.
So, you know, I was picked to be on like a game show type thing in Europe. And when my probation officer came here, I told them no. They picked me though. They wanted me to do it.
But you said told them no.
I did tell them no, because when I talked to my probation officer, she said if you win the $100,000, she said we're gonna take it. She said it's considered a windfall, and we'll take it.
But they're gonna take it. They're really gonna take it regardless, man. Even if you're off.
No, I understand that. Oh. But it would have been on. They're gonna take it a lot easier if I'm on probation.
True that.
Like if I'm not on probation, we're gonna have an argument.
Well, get them to issue a judgment, and they're probably gonna take it, bro.
Yeah. So, but as soon as,
because they know who you are, and they're probably gonna look that up.
Right. So I sat there. So I was like, oh, okay. And then she was like, so you know, I'm just letting you know. Like, I mean, you can go. I'll let you travel there. That's fine. You can go. I think it'd be great. You know, good for you for your career, whatever exposure. She said, but if you do win, she says, yeah, they're it's gonna fall under a windfall. And I went, okay. I said, I understand. And like she left and I went and typed a letter and said, not going. Like I already was on the fence.
That included it. Yeah.
Right. Which is so stupid by the government. Like if I had gone and won, not that I think I was going to win, but there's a chance I'm going to win. If I had gone and won, then you guys could have gotten 40 or 50 grand.
It's not that show Traitor, is it?
No, they were developing the show. Matter of fact, they were going to start shooting it in like 2 months from now. Another reason I didn't do it was because I have a speaking engagement the same time period they wanted me to do it. And I was like, well, then, you know, like now I have to cancel. And they were like, okay, well, we'll reimburse you for the speaking engagement. And I thought about it and I talked to Jess and I was like, it's not the money. I mean, it is the money. But on top of that, like this guy booked me 6 months ago.
Right.
Well, at this point, it was 6 months. It was a few months ago, but 6 months before the event. Like, what a dick move. So the combination of all of those things, I was like, yeah, I'm good. Like there was the added, there was the incentive of like, hey, you might win. But you know what? Forget it. Forget it. Like, but how stupid of the government? We could take 50%. No, we're taking it all. Okay, well, then what's the incentive for me to try? Amen. What is the incentive for me to do anything to make an effort to pay it off if you're going to take every single dime, every single dime? So I just won't do that then.
Well, once it's a judgment, there are steps you can take to mitigate it and only give them percentages. So you can still get your income tax and stuff like that. But that's what you're going to get at the end. At the close to the end, like maybe around the 1st of July, like I said, she's going to come. And then after it's over, you're going to get an option to either keep making payments or get a judgment against you.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I do an annual financial report. And I do it every July because I started in July. Well, maybe like in January, she sent it to me. And I said, I just filled one of these out a few months ago. And she said, I know, but I want you to fill it out again. She goes, because I'm going to go ahead and submit you to the financial resource department or whatever it is at the court to let them know that you're going to be getting off in 6 months. So I'm giving them a few months to review it. And I went, she said, so you have to send one last one. She goes, so this is it. And I was like, so I don't know if I'll be doing another one in July, but I was like, okay, so she's already put the paperwork in.
Yeah, no, she's you're almost done, bro. You're almost done. It's really weird. Just know the 9th, it's over. You know, if that's the day you went on, that's the day you come off.
So you know, there's always that monkey on your back. Even though I'm like, I'm not doing anything wrong. How many times have you met people that weren't really doing anything wrong and ended up getting thrown back in the clink?
Well, no, like, those are stories that we heard.
Yeah, but who knows? But I mean, I've talked to guys where they were in a car, you know, so like I was a passenger and this guy got into a car, you know, into a car chase with the cops. And then because I was with him or I got pulled over and because I was with a felon,
I didn't tell you about that. My friend Mello, I'm riding in the car with him and he's driving crazy. I'm like, bro, you're driving crazy. Yeah, the cop gets behind me. I'll outrun him. I'm like, note to self. Once I get out,
don't get back in the car. I'm
like, you fucking outrun the cops. I'm like, what the hell are you thinking about, bro?
No.
I can't put my life in those type of situations.
No, I can't be around those people.
Yeah.
Which is probably good for me anyway. I shouldn't be around those people anyway. They're just lunatics. You know, they tell great stories.
Yes.
Other than that. Should have had Mello on here, but he's got a bunch of stories.
Well, now. All right. So, you want to close it out?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate you coming on and talking with me. Everybody's been asking for you. So
I'm coming back. I'll always say that. So
hey, thank you guys for watching. I really appreciate it. Do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell so you get notified of videos just like this. Please consider joining my Patreon. And thank you very much. And check out Zach's channel, Black Zach, and we will leave the link in the description box. See ya.